So, Justin Bourne, I've figured out what this radio property has become.
You and me?
It's become an Agatha Christie novel. Stewie's doing television full-time. Yeah. Berkey's in Pittsburgh. It's like Murder on the Orient Express. Every time the lights flicker, we remove one of the players. So it's you and me, buddy. We'll be the full-time consistents right now.
I feel like George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. Everyone keeps going off to do they're leaving me back home in Bedford Falls here.
You once called me a warp-frustrated old man. Well, you're a warp-frustrated young man, George Bailey.
That's really good.
Well, thanks. I love that movie. Coming up on the program, I'll let you know, Ron Hextall is going to join us here in about 15 minutes. Pittsburgh Penguins general manager Sean McKenzie, bottom of the hour, Sportsnet's Toronto Maple Leaf correspondent and reporter. We'll talk about the Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens. That's the marquee game tonight. Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey pregame 7. Puck drops just after 7:30. But that was a shocker yesterday, hey? I think for all of us, when Elliot around 2:15 broke the news that it wasn't just going to be Ron Hextall with the Pittsburgh Penguins. There was also going to be a president of hockey operations, and it was going to be our now former colleague, Brian Burke. One, you're happy for Brian. We all are. I think we're all singing from the same hymn book on that one. I think we're all on the same page too, that we're gonna really miss working with Brian Burke. Before we start to get into some of the specifics about Brian, about the Pittsburgh Penguins, what are your thoughts? Like, what were your thoughts when you saw this news yesterday?
Well, you know, my thoughts are that he's someone really well suited to assess what they are, the Pittsburgh Penguins, with a fresh set of eyes and move in a direction that, you know, maybe they need to go. And I don't know necessarily what that is, but I think he's the right guy to not pull any punches, and they need a little bit of an honest reflection of what they are and where they're going. But yeah, with you, I was, you know, it's too bad. It's disappointing to see him go before we got the chance to spend more time together. Although I am glad he left before he hated me. I feel like that was inevitable. He only called me a little dink once, but we would have got there surely more times if we had spent enough time together, I think.
So you're not submitting your resume to Brian Burke, president of hockey operations of the Pittsburgh Penguins? What a magic. I've always wondered about this. I haven't asked Brian, but I talked to him last night. I should have asked him as well. Like, how many people, now broadcast colleagues, have called him for jobs? Like, normally when you take over a position like this, like, I got a ton of texts from people last night saying, is this still Berkey's number? And it's, you know, pretty obvious, you know, what they're sort of angling for. I'm always curious, you know, who comes out of the woodwork when you take a new job like this in the NHL? Berkey, president of hockey operations. I would only imagine what his iPhone would look like last night.
Yeah, no, it's, I'm sure it's heavy. It's interesting, too, because he knows everyone in hockey. Like, he knows all of the people, which essentially led to him getting this job, right? Like, he talked about, I don't know if you heard him on Writer's Block, but saying to CEO David Morehouse, like, you know, Morehouse would confer with him, what does this guy do well? What do you know about this guy? What does this guy do? And all of a sudden, it's like, why don't I just hire the guy who knows about all these people, you know, to do some of the hiring? So, Berkey knows everyone in the business and would have a good sense for who he would want to be where. It's obviously a great hire for the Penguins.
So I was saying this on the morning show on Leadoff today, mentioned it on our podcast. We did, Elliot and I did one with Berkey last night, that the one thing, it's a couple of things that I'll take from our time here with Brian over the past 2.5 years. One is how much he craves being on a team. And I'll give you an example from my past. When Brian started here, there had been a couple years leading up to it where him and I were not on the same page, not on the best of terms. This is just the nature of the industry. We were not on good terms at all. And I remember the first day that I was going into the CBC building to do television and was working with Brian that night. And it was the first time that we had, this would have been the first time that we had spoken in a couple of years since our issue, which I now laugh about. And I remember my wife saying, is this going to be weird for you? And I said, it's not going to be weird for me. Like, I'm fine with it. I don't hold any animosity towards Brian. He was the one that was, you know, pissed off at me about something I said. It wasn't the other way around. And I'll never forget this, Justin. So I walk into the green room on the 10th floor, the Lotus Room, as it's called. And Kelly gave it that name. So I walk into Lotus, and Brian's there by himself. I'm saying, okay, this will be an interesting conversation. It's been some time since we've spoken, and I'll never forget this. He stood up and walked over to me, shook my hand, looked me in the eyes, and I'll never forget what he said. This is such a hockey guy thing too, Justin. You'll get it right away. He shakes my hand and he says, "We're on the same team now."
Yeah, that's great, isn't it?
Like, does that not feel like, okay, A, it's a Brian Burke story, but two, it's like such like that hockey guy thing to do. Hey, we're on the same team now. Whatever happened before, it doesn't matter. We're on the same team.
Well, so, I mean, you look at guys in the league who get in fights all the time and they join forces and all of a sudden they're besties.
100%. And the other one that I'll take away from my time with Brian is just how charitable a person he is. Like, I always knew that he was generous, and I knew some of the charity work that he was involved in. I didn't know the depths of it until I got to know Brian a lot more, and hosted some events for him as well. Always helped out whenever he asked. We all do that. Like, a lot of his time outside of covering the game, you know, being involved in hockey, being on TV, on radio, etc., is charitable initiatives. Like, for a lot of them. And like, this guy goes out of his own pocket all the time for various charity endeavors. I don't know how much money he's raised or helped raise in his life. But the one thing that I will say about Brian always is that is one of the most charitable people I have ever known, hands down. Yeah. What did you learn about Berkey in a couple of years here?
Well, you know, I guess I was worried going into it a little bit, you know, based on pedigree. You know, he deals with some high rollers in our game. And, you know, I'm fairly new to the media business. And, you know, getting taken seriously is the only way that a radio show with someone is going to work, is having the respect of your peers. And he was good early on about...
Yeah, you Justin, know, you know, no one really cares what you think.
Yeah, you know, like, he was good the first couple days he joined us and we were in the office together, to call me over to sit down with him and talk about things and get opinions and get to know each other better. I was fortunate that we had a background. You know, I had been in touch with, I'd written an article, "It's Time to End the Use of Gay Slurs in Hockey," in 2009, and his son Brendan had reached out to me. I had reached, you know, followed up with Brendan about telling his story because I found it fascinating, and I got involved with the Burks at that time, when John Buchgrass eventually wrote the story for ESPN, which was slightly bigger than the platform jtborn.com would have provided them. So I had known them for a while, so I had that advantage, but it was great to learn that I had his respect early on as a peer. And yeah, he was a great teammate, and I appreciated having someone who would say what needed to be said as well. So he helped us be more efficient, and certainly was obviously tons of stories on air. Great to work with.
We're going to be joined by Ron Hextall here in a couple of moments. Pittsburgh Penguins general manager, just talking a little bit about Brian Burke, who now leaves us to join the Pittsburgh Penguins in a surprising move yesterday that caught sort of everybody off guard. Everyone on the conference call yesterday in the hockey department was pretty shocked at the entire thing. But listen, wish him the best. Hope that he does well. You know, just talking to him last night, he sounds so happy.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, he sounds like, I know he would always tell me how much he loves doing this job, like talking hockey, watching hockey games. But just to finally have skin in the game for him again. Like, this is the thing about competitors. And I'm always interested in, you know, who transitions into broadcasting from sports and who stays in. And I'm not saying that people that transition into broadcasting don't still have competitive juices, because I don't think that ever goes away. But you can really understand, and talking to Brian yesterday, he sounded so happy and so enthusiastic about having a team that he can agonize over. So he can be happy at a win, he can be pissed off at a loss. And it seems as if that has completely rejuvenated him.
You know what I find the hardest part of being in media is, like, I feel competitive against our competitors and want to beat them in every conceivable way in this current job. But there is no... You can't do it with effort and hustle in one moment. You don't have a night where you get to punch him in the face and score a hat trick and sit down and go, "Got him." You know, yes, like, you know, that they score one for us. You just kind of have to consistently plug along and be good every day. So there's less, I don't know, less highs and lows, I think. And I miss that. I miss that about playing the game itself and being involved, even with the, you know, the Toronto Marlies, is having a result at the end of the day. So you could tell Berkey was excited to get back to feeling that a little bit.
And today it's roll up the sleeves and get to work as well. We'll talk to Hextall here in a couple of moments. Sean McKenzie, bottom of the hour tonight. In a couple of moments before the new Pittsburgh Penguins general manager joins us, Justin. Your thoughts on what we look at tonight? Travis Dermott draws back in, Rasmus Sandin, Mikko Lehtinen out. Your thoughts on, and I can't remember the last time we've said this, you know, this deep into a season, the top two teams in the division, Toronto and Montreal, are going to go head-to-head in Montreal this evening. This may sound like a broadcast from 1966 when I say that, but what do you make tonight? Habs and Leafs, top two teams in the division, two of the top teams in the league.
Well, I think both teams are dying for a little reality check, a dose of competition, and not that they haven't been getting competition so much as they want to play a top team, another one of the teams that's a legitimate cup hopeful, to see what they got. Like you never get a measure of your team when you're going against teams that are going to finish in the bottom 10 teams in the league. As good as those teams can be on certain nights, you know, you can get away with too much. The margin of error is too great. You need to play against the good teams to really measure yourself, and I think both teams are trying to get a sense of, I mean, listen, we're in huge markets, and all the media, us included, are telling them how great they are. And I think the coaching staff would be like, are we this good, or are we just playing teams that are that bad? And I think that's the answer they're looking for tonight.
You see, that's sort of, I think that's a conversation that's being had in every division right now. Like, when you consider the one,
so true.
You know, the one fact that everybody is dealing with right now, no matter how well you're playing within your division, if you're going to win the Stanley Cup, okay, if you're going to win the Stanley Cup this season, you will have only faced two teams outside your division in the entire season. Like, there's a whole bunch of unknown. Like, we look at the Canadian division, look at Toronto and Montreal, and we say, wow, they're playing great. But we don't know if they're great. We don't know how great
really
they are.
Don't.
Measured off against Tampa or Boston or the Vegas Gold. We don't know. We really have no idea. And that's why I think the playoffs, you know, after the divisions are done, is going to be fascinating. Because nobody has a clue, and I think everybody, Justin, may have it in the back of their mind, we don't know how good we are here.
Well, worries me a little, but also should make teams in other divisions feel good, is that by the time you get to round three of the playoffs, teams don't even look like themselves anymore. Like, great players have been eliminated with injuries. Guys are run down. Lines are scrambled. You're patching over holes. So, yeah, you can look around the league and say, boy, you know, we won a division that wasn't very good. What about when we go up against Colorado? But by the time you see a Colorado in the third round, it might not be the Colorado from the season. So every team at the top of every division is going to have a legitimate chance come playoff time.
What are you looking for tonight? Specifically, we always talk about Austin Matthews and the goal-scoring streak and how he's the game-changer, etc. We saw these two teams on opening night. That was an interesting game. Power play is very much the story for the Toronto Maple Leafs in that one. Both teams grabbing a point, Toronto grabbing two. What do you look for tonight? Anyone jumping off the page at you with these two teams?
Yeah, I wrote about Austin Matthews and his goal scoring today, so I've got a couple of stats. Right now, Austin Matthews scores 23%, 22.9% of the Maple Leafs' goals on the season. He scored more against Carey Price. Only one other goalie has he scored more on in his career. So right now, if you're the Montreal Canadiens, you got to stop Austin Matthews. He's on an 8-game scoring streak. The guy is a big part of this Toronto offense, and you know Montreal is supposed to be one of the best defensive teams, or the best defensive team in this division. So to me, it's can you shut down Austin Matthews and make other players beat you, because he is just transcendent right now, and that's no easy ask.
More on the Leafs and Habs at the bottom of the hour when we bring aboard Sean McKenzie, covers the Maple Leafs for Sportsnet. In the meantime, we talked a lot about Brian Burke off the top of the program. Let's turn our attention now to the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. He is Ron Hextall, and he joins us now. Ron, thanks so much for doing this. And first off, congratulations. It's great to see you back in the big chair in the NHL.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I must admit, here in Ron Hextall, general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, sounds a little different. I must admit.
Well, okay. So I wanted to get to this eventually, but since you already hinted at it, let's go there. There are two Philadelphia Flyers running the team. Berkey, of course, played with the Maine Mariners farm team for the Philadelphia Flyers. And, of course, we think of Ron Hextall and Conn Smythe Trophy winner, great Philadelphia Flyers goaltender. I'm sure that conversation has been had somewhere amongst management in Pittsburgh. Wow, we've got two Flyers guys running the team here.
Yeah, I actually wondered if that was going to be a little bit of a roadblock there with them. It certainly wasn't going to be for me, and in the end, obviously, it wasn't. So I was happy about that. Mario was very quick to remind me that I actually knocked four of his teeth out way back in the day. And, oh no, this probably isn't going real well right now. So I had to get him to remind me of how it happened. It was actually on a follow through. Excuse me. He accepted the blame for it, so it was pretty funny.
I got to say, there aren't too many people on Earth who've knocked out four of Mario Lemieux's teeth and don't remember how it happened. That's pretty unique.
Yeah, not real proud of that one. I did not know about that one, to be honest.
That's hilarious.
When he told me, I said, you know what, I think I do remember, actually, on a follow-through. But I didn't know I knocked any of his teeth out.
That's too funny.
Terrible.
So you take over the role now, and you head into a team with obviously some established superstars that has had a lot of success and not that far back. I guess the question is just, where do you start? You know, we've seen some other people go to organizations and you know, sort of take things in for a while before making moves. What's your plan with this team?
Yeah, no, that's certainly the best. You think you know a team, you think you know an organization, but until you get right in there, you don't know it. So we're working right now to get me inside the bubble there and, you know, get to work and start communicating with the coaches and the staff around there. So I look forward to getting up there and getting in the bubble there and getting going. But, you know, we feel like we have a good team, very good team. But, you know, in the end, the team's going to dictate kind of the types of moves that we're looking. We don't necessarily have a one plan right now. You know, you think about certain things that could happen, and this could go, you know, a couple of ways. So hoping to, you know, we're going to make this team the best we can make it this year, and then we'll kind of go from there.
I'm curious what an interview with Mario Lemieux is like. He is one of the more enigmatic owners out there. We don't hear a lot. I mean, he's a pretty quiet guy. There's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of Mario Lemieux press conferences. He sort of shies away from all of it. And yet he's one of, if maybe not the greatest player to ever play the game. What's an interview with him like?
It was good. I mean, we got on, there's two of us on, as an interview with three of them, and we were waiting for Ron Burkle there, and we were just kind of small talking about the old days and stuff. It's kind of neat to, I'm not a big, you know, kind of look at the past thing, but when you're sitting there with a guy that you played against, it's always nice to kind of reminisce a little bit. And I don't know, I think I mentioned something about they blew us out in the playoffs, and I think I mentioned that game after he said something about me knocking his teeth out. I got the best of him once, and I guess he got the best of me the other time.
How does the relationship with Brian Burke work? I read that you had had your job first, and then they kind of went to you after about adding Brian Burke. What's the dynamic going to be like within the organization there?
Well, first of all, if you asked me if I could be the GM and not have Brian there, I would say my choice would be to have Brian there. So I'm extremely happy to have him on board. He's got a wealth of experience, and just to have someone around to help you to take things off your plate, to bounce things off. You know, there's a lot of things that come across your desk in a day, and, you know, even not even necessarily the trades or the free agent stuff, just the day-to-day managing that happens, and how you run a scouting staff and how many people you have and who oversees who. And there's a lot of decisions to make. And the one thing I know about the Penguins organization, they're very well run. So we're not going to go in there and blow things up. I know firsthand that I will learn things going in there the way they do things. Maybe we're better than some of the ways that I did things. In other areas, you're gonna tweak and make them more conducive to the way that you think you can work efficiently. So I'm excited to get in there. I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to Jimmy Rutherford. He was my idol when I was a child growing up in Pittsburgh watching my dad play. He's been very, very good to me over the years, and he did a terrific job with the Penguins. So certainly wish Jimmy the best.
And goalies make the best GMs, right, Ron?
I I tend not to want to admit that I was a goalie. Those guys are different.
Well, I am curious because you mentioned Jim, and he was, you know, the netminder of the Pittsburgh Penguins when your dad was playing with the Pens, a much different time. But how much would your dad ever talk to you about playing with the Pittsburgh Penguins?
My dad's a Penguin to this day. I mean, that's he played in Pittsburgh for, I think, 5 or 6 years, Atlanta for a couple, and then split his last year, Detroit, Minneapolis. So he's a Penguin. I mean, it's just the way he is. And it was actually hard for him when I got drafted by Philly and then I started playing. And he would come down and, you know, Clarkie and Dave Schultz and Don Selesky and Gary Dornhoff and all those guys there. He was a little uncomfortable, and I'm like, Dad, just relax. And so he had a little bit of a hard time coming over to the other side, and he did, but he's right back. He's a Pen now.
That's great. When, you know, being in the media, I'm able to look at the current Flyers team and say, boy, Ron Hextall had a lot to do with why that is a very good hockey team. I wonder how you feel about the Flyers these days when you look at them, if you feel some validation in their success, if it helped you get this job, or just where you're left on the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I'm proud of the work we did when we were there. We worked hard. You know, we took over an older team that was, you know, a good team, but not we didn't believe a contender at the time, and salary cap problems. And I know what was coming up. If we didn't get rid of some of the salaries, we were going to have to move Braden Schenn and Sean Couturier. So we needed to move some salary within a year or two, and we were able to do it and keep the younger players that we had at the time, and you know, build what they have today. So we're, you know, I'm proud of the job we did, and certainly that was my first opportunity as a general manager, and quite frankly, I appreciate the fact that I had an opportunity.
You take over the chair, as you mentioned, from Jim Rutherford, now the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You mentioned the Philadelphia Flyers, a great Keystone State rivalry. I am curious about one player specifically, and that's Sidney Crosby. And Elliot and I talked to Berkey last night in our podcast, and I said, so Berkey, what's the first order of business for you? And he said, it goes like this. Number one, call Sidney Crosby. Number two, call Sidney Crosby. Number three, call Sidney Crosby. What are your orders of business, and have you talked to Crosby already?
I have talked to him, and I'll sit down with him once I get inside the bubble there, back and settled in. There's a lot going on right now. So my three things were, you know, talk to the coach, obviously Sully and Sid, and just try to get a feel from Sully how things are going and what's good, what's bad. And it was, you know, Sully and I talked for a while. I mean, he's obviously the best guy right now to talk to. And then you got Patrick, assistant GM, who I talked to at length yesterday as well. So starting to kind of get some ideas and get a feel for the group. But in saying that, I get a lot of work to do to get familiar with things, and as does Berkey. So hopefully we can get in there soon and start working with the coaches and the players and the rest of the staff.
Ron, is there a moment when you get a new GM job and where there's like a presidential briefing and they're like, here's what you want to know. Now that you have the job, Malkin punched Crosby in the chin on Tuesday. This guy hates that guy. Is there like a moment where you get a flood of information?
Well, there's some dynamics in every team. There's no doubt about it. And of course, you hear dynamics, whether you interview for a job or you're talking to the other manager. Every team's, you know, got things that go on that you have to manage. But actually, I think things are, from what I hear, they're pretty clean right now in Pitt. So I'm excited about that. And as I said, it's a very well-run organization. So it's not like you go in there and blow everything up. It's, you know, watch your people and keep people in place and see how they do and make decisions as you go along. So that's, you know, everybody, it'd be an evaluation period for everybody, obviously. But everything I hear about the staff and the crew there is pretty good.
And you have some Ferraris to drive in some of the superstar players on that squad. Listen, we wish you the best. We said it to Berkey yesterday. Wish him the best as well. Good luck with the Penguins. And now all of a sudden there's a new log on the fire in the Philadelphia-Pittsburgh rivalry. And I know you're going to love it. I know as fans we're going to love it as well. Best of luck with the Penguins, Ron.
Yeah, I appreciate your guys' time.
There he is, Ron Hextall, the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, as named officially yesterday. Brian Burke goes in as the president of hockey operations. So it sounds as if, very much, when you listen to some of the press conferences, podcasts, radio shows, TV appearances, etc. yesterday, and just hearing Ron Hextall right there, Justin, talking about, you know, the order of business, it sounds as if it's right now it's wait and see. Like, no one's gone in with expectations. Like, it doesn't sound like Hextall and Burke have gone in with the, okay, here's what we're going to do. This guy's out, that guy's out. Here's what we need. It sounds very much like we're going to see how the season plays out, and then it's big decision time.
It's actually really, I think, a fun thing if you're a player, if you're Sidney Crosby and crew, because they say, you know, he said, we'll wait and see the what kind of decisions we want to make with our personnel, which is to say, if the Penguins go on a tear, they get hot and they win some hockey games and they're in contention, I think, you know, they're a team who wants to add players and gets better. So it's kind of up to them the direction they want to go, if this thing's going to get torn down or go for it again this year.
We thank Ron Hextall for stopping by and the Pittsburgh Penguins organization for making him available. In a couple of moments, we're going to be joined here by Sean McKenzie. It is the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens. This one in Montreal, we remember what happened on the opening night. And since then, Montreal has been one of the pleasant surprise stories around the NHL. They have been nothing short of fantastic. I think the emergence of players like Nick Suzuki, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, Jeff Petrie's having a fantastic year on the blue line for the Habs as well. We're going to get on the Leafs-Habs page here in a couple of moments. Sean McKenzie from Sportsnet, who covers the Toronto Maple Leafs, will join us. Step away briefly, come back, talk about tonight's matchup. This is Hockey Central, Merrick alongside Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We are giving you the chance to be part of the Rogers Hometown Hockey Viewing Party this Saturday, where you can virtually meet Ron, Tara, and NHL alumni. Tune in tomorrow for your chance to win. You can also enter for the chance to win on our Instagram or in the Rogers Hometown Hockey section of the Sportsnet app. Find details at sportsnet.ca/590. A couple of things here as we stand by for Sean McKenzie. We'll get on the Maple Leafs Habs page. Do you have a thought on the ongoing Columbus saga? It appears now that there was an incident on the bench between Patrick Laine and an assistant coach, which led to the benching from two nights ago. And, oh, by the way, a day after he was healthy scratched, for I think the first time in his career, Mikko Koivu said, "That's it, I'm out of here, I retire."
Yeah.
So it's the opposite of quiet in Columbus, comma, again, Borny.
Yeah, the Koivu one is interesting. It's rare that you just play enough or play poorly enough to see a guy just go, I'm done.
I've had enough of this.
Like, a lot of us have played a game of golf where you just go, I should literally never play this game again. But, like, we all eventually do again. So that I don't know what to think there. The Laine thing, I think it's quite likely that something happened in passing. You know, I doubt after 4 days or 4 games, Laine even had enough material to sass off at any person for any extended period of time. So I'm guessing it was just some little talk back cheap shot that the staff didn't like and wanted to set precedent that you don't talk to the staff like that. It could be as simple as that. Or,
yeah.
Or this could go on for a long time.
Yeah, Columbus continues to be one of the most interesting stories, not necessarily for the good reasons to follow in the NHL. All right, to the Leafs and the Habs, and here's an interesting one: Montreal and Toronto. This is from our Sportsnet group. The first meeting between the Leafs and the Habs when they are 1-2 in the same division through at least 12 games of a season since. Do you want to throw a dart at it, Borny?
1934.
1938.
Oh,
that's
wow.
How far back we have to go. Sean McKenzie, do you want to make the obligatory joke about your dad covered those two teams?
No, I think both of you guys did, though, didn't you, Jeff?
Oh, Grandpa Merrick doesn't like that one. Sean McKenzie, respect your elders.
I was just hearing you guys talk about Patrick Laine. I thought I'd give you a little attitude and see if you benched me. Maybe I could get off the call a little early if I gave you some attitude. But no,
yeah, that's
you guys are resilient.
Grab some pine there, Mackenzie. Grab some pine. it is sort of weird territory. Like it is bizarre hearing Montreal, Toronto, 1-2 in the division. Montreal, Toronto, two of the top teams in the NHL. We sort of expected it from the Toronto Maple Leafs, based on preseason prognostications. But I think a lot of us are surprised at Montreal. Now, Brian Burke, before we left us, have to give him props right away. He said that's the best team in the division. And early indications are, man, like, good call by Berkey. What did you have the Habs doing early in the season, Sean?
I can't say I was as bullish as Berkey was, but when you watched them in the bubble last year, it's hard not to look at the changes they made and say, well, this could be something special. They could be a really good team. But I just remember so many times going to cover the Habs for hockey night games, and you know, they're on a roll and they look great and things are going well, but then you go there and things just, it always seems like over the last, you know, similar to the situation in the Maple Leafs, but a bit different, is there's always lots of promise, but it just never seemed to fill to match. And much like the Leafs, I think there's a time when finally things were going to come through for a team and finally they're going to look the team that many people pegged them to be. But I think, you know, once you started adding those pieces, I think there was lots of optimism there. I just was curious if it would actually follow through, and now we're seeing it. I think all those people that were bullish on them are sitting there saying, I told you so, and I think they were correct.
Sean, what do you think the Leafs are going to look like on their back end, their defense group, come playoff time? Just looking at the bottom of that lineup there, Bogosian hasn't come out yet, if I'm not mistaken. Lettinen has been a lot more than Rasmus Sandin. Travis Dermott seems like kind of a regular. What do you see playing out there by the time they get to playoffs for their best six guys?
I think the reason you're not seeing Bogosian come out is because they probably see him as a guy that they need and want come playoff time. Like, they probably see that's where the big value is for him, that, you know, he might not be as effective as you want in the regular season. You're not really too worried about it. Much like guys like Thornton and Simmons is, you know, this is a Leafs team that isn't just trying to make the playoffs, right? They're trying to go deeper in the playoffs. The assumption coming into this year, if you're the Leafs or you're a Leafs fan, is we're a playoff team, but we want to be more than a first-round exit team. So you go out and get these guys, and I think you focus on when the games get really nasty. When we talk so much come playoff time is how does things change? How does the game ratchet up? And even, you know, you talk about the officiating changes, it becomes nastier. And I think it was BX on Saturday night a few weeks ago that had this amazing segment on why Zach Bogosian was on the ice in the last couple seconds of a close game. And I clips in a row of Bogosian just dumping his winger, not allowing him to get to the net with about 7 seconds on the clock. And that's the stuff right there that you want playoff time. So I think that's where you're going to see big value. And I think for the first time in a long time, we're looking at options, right? It's, you're trying to get Lettinen comfortable. You're trying to get Sandin comfortable. It's giving Dermott some competition in the lineup. For so many years, it was like, who's going to go in? Like, Martin Marincin is your only real option. And it's no knock on Marincin, but you didn't really have these pieces. Now you have three or four different options. So I think what you're seeing from Keefe right now is he's trying everyone. He's giving everyone the opportunity and trying to figure out, you know, in a shortened season, what will the best look come playoff time. But I think we're seeing a lot more options than we saw in the past.
See, part of me thinks that would have been the pitch for the Maple Leafs to Bogosian in the first place, not unlike the pitch to Joe Thornton. Like, I think like, you know, Joe Thornton's going to come in if you're saying, yeah, you know, you're going to play bottom six, you're going to be in and out of the lineup, maybe we'll flip-flop you with Spezza. That's not a pitch. Just like the Bogosian pitch, I would imagine, wouldn't have sounded like you're going to be in and out of the lineup, competing with Lettinen, competing with Dermott. I would imagine, Sean, that the pitch to get Bogosian to sign with the Maple Leafs is, you're in, period.
Yeah, and I think, you know, considering that Bogosian probably did have a lot of suitors coming off, you know, maybe that wasn't the case a couple years ago and he wasn't quite as highly touted, but you watch him in Tampa and he really served a strong purpose for them. And, you know, he wasn't a major, major role, but he was a big part of that blue line that helped win a Stanley Cup on a team much like Toronto that had all the firepower in the world but just couldn't seem to get over that hump. So I think when you're the Leafs and, you know, you're trying to lure a guy like that, you're right. You can't really say to him, you know what, we're going to have you competing against this guy we just signed from the KHL and one of our young up-and-coming prospects and Travis Dermott. You're really not going to that's going to have to fight for a spot. You got to tell these guys, right, this is why we want you, this is your role, and this is why we value you. And I'm assuming that I can't say they promised them you're going to be in every night, but I'm sure they made a sales pitch that, listen, this is why we want you, this is why we value you. And it wasn't, you know, they weren't lukewarm on them saying, ah, maybe if you come here, we'll play you. I'm sure they gave them a pretty good sales pitch to get him.
Sean, do you think Austin Matthews is good?
No.
Best right, question, best answer.
I think he's great.
Yeah. I feel like I'm the guy who always asks about the fringe of the lineup, but there's a reason. Like, there's nothing really to ask about Matthews. So I wanted to go to Pierre Engvall without seeming like I'm being a hipster. Engvall is in tonight, the third line. What's going on with Pierre Engvall? Because this is a guy who they just signed for $1.25 million over a couple of years, or sorry, 2.5, so over 2 years. They obviously like him. He's been out of the lineup. Why doesn't it seem like while they're trying to piece together a lineup, he's played a bigger role for this group?
Well, it's interesting because I think you go back to the one, I believe it was the blue and white game, and somebody asked Sheldon Keefe about Pierre Engvall. I'm like, you know that famous Simpsons meme when it's like, stop, he's already dead?
Yeah.
That was kind of like the answer that Keefe gave about Engvall. And it was a bit strange because someone asked him, like, what do you think of him? And he said, I believe he said something like, he's got to be better. We expect more from him. And, like, I guess, you know, he scored his first goal in a year. That's something. And it was almost like a weird answer from a coach that usually, you know, will reserve too much judgment. So obviously they wanted more from Pierre. And there was something going on there that they felt he wasn't living up to what they expected or needed. But he's shown some promise here. And you know, I don't know if it's enough of a sample size for us to say that he's going to be a huge impact player. But the tools are there. And I think maybe that's where Sheldon Keefe's coming from, in the sense that when you look at him on paper and you look at him, you know, in practice and in certain game situations, he shows so much promise. But I feel like they want to draw more out of him. So I guess, you know, you got to give him the opportunity to see if you can get more out of him. And I think they, in a dream world for them, that he becomes a very, very reliable third, fourth line guy for them, which, you know, we know in the past for the Leafs, they have the firepower. Like you mentioned, Austin Matthews is good. You need that little bit of depth that they hope he can bring.
Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey tonight, Leafs and Habs pregame 7, puck drops just after 7:30 at the Bell Center. You know, we did a little sort of, I don't know what we call it, thought experiment, who knows, throw it around the table, chin wag, about the Sheldon Keefe effect, and if there is a Sheldon Keefe effect. And we were throwing around the idea, like, what would the Maple Leafs be like right now if Mike Babcock was still the coach? Do we talk enough about the coaches, Sheldon Keefe, the coaches' effect on this team? So to Borny's point, we talk a lot about Matthews, man. Like, we talk, like, Freddie Anderson coming out the last game. We'll talk a lot about him, Marner, et cetera, Tavares, Nylander at times, Morgan Riley. But do we talk, in your estimation, enough about what Sheldon Keefe, the coach, has done with this team? Because Lord knows we talked a lot about Babcock. Do we talk enough about Keefe?
I think it's a good thing that you don't talk a lot about him, because a lot of the times that when we were talking about Mike Babcock and when we were talking about, or when the fans were talking about him, it was something they weren't happy about. It was, they didn't like the decision to scratch Jason Spezza. They didn't like Austin Matthews' ice time. They didn't like the lines. And all of that at times felt like a little bit of a distraction, especially when it came to the scratching Spezza and stuff like that, because it's game one. And there's a lot of decisions there that were made that just didn't seem like they had to be made, that ended up ruffling feathers and causing issues that probably were avoidable. But Sheldon Keefe doesn't seem like that type of coach. And Borno can speak to it more, because I know he's got a lot of knowledge and knows him a lot more than most people in the media do. But I just think he's a guy who, and you know, and not to double back on this again, but he was asked yesterday about the Patrick Laine thing. And he kind of made a point saying, like, I don't really believe in sitting guys, and I don't really believe in, like, exposing that, because I'd rather just talk to the guy behind the scenes. And I think that seems to be the Sheldon Keefe motto, is, you know, he doesn't really want to put, he doesn't need to make statements. He doesn't need to do things that, you know, get talked about in the media. I think as much as, you know, we talk about Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner a lot, I think the biggest Keefe impact is those two, is what you're seeing them do together, is that Sheldon Keefe is allowing them to play 23, 24 minutes a night. He's allowing them to play together. So he's almost given those guys a little bit more control, a little bit more creativity, and we're seeing Austin Matthews score an incredible clip. We're seeing Marner dominate at times. I think that freedom is what we're talking about, those two, more because of Sheldon Keefe, even though we're not directly talking about Sheldon Keefe, if that makes sense.
It does, and I'm curious about the last game where Keith said, 11-7 wasn't the smartest thing, I'm paraphrasing, but wasn't thrilled with that decision. Anything specific that he was getting at by that comment?
No, and I like to hear that, though, because more often than not, a lot of coaches, and this isn't pick on Mike Babcock time at all by any means, because a lot of coaches do this, especially the older coaches, I find, and it seems maybe a new era of young coaches are more willing to say, hey, look, I didn't like that, or here's why I didn't like that, or I made a mistake. And, you know, if someone said to Mike Babcock, or a lot of coaches said, you know, it didn't seem to work, or, you know, what did you think of 11-7? Oh, it was fine. And they might, you know, cast the blame somewhere else. But Keith, you know, was willing to maybe take that one and say, I didn't really like 11-7 tonight. It didn't work out for our team. I'd do this differently. And they're willing to give a little bit more information. So I don't want to read too deep into it. But it is a little bit refreshing for a young coach to come out and say, like, yeah, that maybe I should have done something different. I think as a fan, if you're not a fan of 11-7, or you thought, why is he doing that? And then you see the coach say, well, I didn't really like that. You go, okay, you know, I can respect and appreciate that.
Do you think, since we've touched the fringes of the other positions, do we think we'll see Michael Hutchison do goaltending for the Toronto Maple Leafs at any point this year?
I love where you're going with these, Borny. Holy, I can't wait for the Marlies questions next. Hold on.
I'm going to have to pull a Patrick Laine here and just... I honestly don't know. Now we're getting into super hipster territory. You're like the guy who loves coffee who's asking me about like the rare Ethiopian blend that he prefers. And, like,
there's no questions at the top, Sean. What do you mean?
it's a busy schedule, and if they need, and Michael Hutchinson is one of the nicest human beings I've dealt with in hockey. So you know what? I hope he gets a chance, and I hope he kills it. And I think more often than not, we look at guys in the NHL and just think of them as, you know, oh, that's just a guy, you know, he's not that good. He's had a bad history, but we don't really take into account. Like, he's just such a good guy. So I hope for his sake he gets an opportunity and he kills it. I think if you're the Leafs, though, you ideally don't really probably want that in a shortened season when every point is worth so much. So I think they'll ride Anderson, but, you know, we're not seeing Jack Campbell back on the ice here anytime soon. And, you know, you hope that his progression comes along quicker. But if Freddie gets tired, but knowing Freddie and how much he likes to play and the routine he likes to get in, I think they'll ride him as much as they possibly can.
Hey, hey, Sean, you know how many hipsters it takes to change a light bulb?
How many?
It's a rare number. You probably never heard of it.
and you were a fan of that number well before anyone else. Those damn light bulb changers have gone mainstream. I don't listen to them anymore.
Those light bulb changers sold out years ago, man. It used to be about the bulb. Now it's not about the bulb anymore.
And they did an Apple commercial, and they suck now.
They just took the check, man. They're like the rest of the man. They just took the check. What do you, before we let you go, what do you expect tonight? Leafs, Habs, top two teams in the division.
I love it. And my favorite thing about this rivalry is, well, finally, there is a rivalry. I've covered so many of these opening season games where it's at the Bell Center, it's at Scotiabank Arena, and it's great in theory because it's the Habs and the Leafs, but more often than not, you get to the game, and it's two teams that are, you know, in very different stages. And I love this Leafs-Habs rivalry because it seems like both teams are trying to get a little bit of what each other has. Like, for years, the Habs were that gritty, grinding team that was tough and mean, but they just didn't have a game breaker. They couldn't really score, and they didn't really have that ability to take over a game. The Leafs had all of that, but they didn't have that grit, that grind that the Habs did. So I think finally the Habs have that goal scoring. They have Suzuki, they have Anderson, they have Toffoli, guys lighting it up. The Leafs have that grit and guys like Simmons and Thornton and Bogosian. It's almost like they're stealing little pieces of each other, and now they finally have met in the middle. So I kind of love to see. I would love if Simmons and Thornton were in. Like, it would be awesome if Simmons was in tonight, and if Perry was in the lineup, and you just let the guys run around and get wild. But I think no matter what, it's going to be great. And a fan, the bat. I posted a TikTok the other day of the Leafs shootout, just practicing, and people on TikTok go crazy for any Leafs content. And like, just the battle. It used to be like, oh, the Habs are suck, and the Leafs fans like were in first. And like, the battle between the fans is sensational right now. I love it.
Let me ask you this.
TikTok. Hang on a second.
Hang on a second.
TikTok is the future, Bort. Like, you want to talk about hipster? Get on TikTok.
I'm on Clubhouse right now. I'm checking that out.
I know. Amel got me on that one. Wow. Okay, let me ask you this, and we are heavy on time here. Who do you think the first the first arena reporter to use a cat filter for a stand-up is going to be?
I'm willing to go Principe. Forward with this. I'm live. I'm not a cat. That's the best video clip I've ever seen in my life. The shifty eyes. Like, the poor guy was in pure panic. Principe will 100% roll that out and nail it. That 100% Principe.
Gene's the guy we're all looking at like, yeah. Yeah, Gino would do that for sure.
A legend. He would kill it.
Yep. You got it. We got to hustle. Thanks so much, as always, Sean. Enjoy the game tonight.
Gentlemen, thanks so much.
There he is, Sean McKenzie. Tonight, it is the Leafs and the Habs, two teams that haven't been in this position in their division, as you mentioned off the top, since 1938, 1-2 in the Scotia North Division. Quick pause. More Hockey Central in a moment. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay, Justin Bourne, we've got about 60 seconds. I'm going to play a quick little game with you here called Who Just Said It? I'm going to read you the quote, and you tell me who said it and what the scenario is. Quote, we've moved on. We've talked about it. It's going to stay in the room. All good now. Sometimes you say things you don't want to say. We've talked about it and moved on. Who said
it? Linea. Did Patrick Laine say that, sir?
Patrick Laine said that, sir. Congratulations. You are one for one on this impromptu game to conclude Hockey Central.
Good game.
There is video of Laine talking to John Tortorella at the end of practice as they try to put this one very much behind them. Do you think that media, and by that we include ourselves, have moved on?
Well, the good news is they're in Columbus, so the media is not as plentiful as even Winnipeg, so they should be okay.
All right. There you go. Thanks for a couple of guests. Sean McKenzie, who just stopped by to sharpen the pencil on the Maple Leafs and the Habs. Tonight, Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. The pregame gets underway at 7. Puck drops at the Bell Center just after 7:30. And thanks to the Pittsburgh Penguins for making their new general manager, Ron Hextall, available. That was a lot of fun. Miss you, Berkey. Enjoy the Keystone State rivalry. Back tomorrow.